for like a sync license, you don't need more than a page. You know, it's the economy of words. It's also just sort of pulling apart what's in there so that you don't get lost in a morass of legalese, and which is so uninviting. And you know, and it's just, it makes you feel so suspicious. You know, it's like, well, what? Okay, if there is a simple way of saying that, what the hell does this mean? You know, I don't want our artists to spend too much time like turning over rocks.
That's Ted Hudson. I'm Steve Cleveland. This is Sync Club. We're back with Ted for part two. Let's dive in. So in your current role, what's a typical day like for you at Color Wheel Music?
Well, it's a lot of emails, because I'm, more than anything else, I'm on the business side. Sean, Ben, and Jeff are also very effective in the administrative space, but they have more of a creative streak, whether it's producing or composing. So my day is spent, and I'm, you know, a bassist, and you know, I love playing bass, but it was never a goal of mine to be a composer. I just like writing bass lines.
Oh, cool.
and playing in a band. I mean, you know, that's my deal.
Nice.
So I don't have any interest really in getting too involved in the production or creative side. I just don't have as much to contribute there as the rest of the guys do. So emails and following up with people, reaching out for new business. So that would be agencies and the like. And then, you know, flying out to meet with people in LA and Nashville and New York, you know, those places. But also exploring some of the smaller markets and, you know, building strategies for marketing our business to other businesses. You know, we don't really have a consumer facing business, you know, in other words, we don't have to have,
sure,
we don't really need a very robust,
so it's all B2B.
Yeah, exactly. We're not saying, hey, average person on Instagram, come check out our website. Right. What were they going to do there? You know, so it's really more about B2B kind of stuff. And that's what I do. So, you know, early on in the company, I helped craft, along with our lawyers, our artist agreement, which was really important. That encapsulates the basic values of our company, and we made it as approachable as possible so that an artist could read it without feeling left out.
Sure.
We tried to make it really readable and accessible to the lay musician.
That's a really positive trend right now.
Yeah.
I talked to somebody else a couple of weeks ago where they're like, all of our agreements are 3 pages.
Oh yeah, ours are 2. And then for a sync license, you don't need more than a page. You know, it's the economy of words. It's also just sort of pulling apart what's in there so that you don't get lost in a morass of legalese, and which is so uninviting. And you know, and it's just, it makes you feel so suspicious, you know, it's like, well, what? Okay, if there is a simple way of saying that, what the hell does this mean? You know, I don't want our artists to spend too much time like turning over rocks.
Yeah. And when you sit there and you read even the simplest of legalese, it always seems like there's some kind of doublespeak going on where.
Well, because lawyers talk to lawyers. That's a big part of the job. And so, you know, they need to employ certain tricks to get their points across to in order to win, you know, a pushback on a certain right or clause. Okay. And then it's signed, and then it's, you know, then that's forever.
Sure.
But I think because of the decentralization of the music industry, because it completely imploded, you don't have quite the same culture anymore. And around contracts, you see that a lot now, I think. Mm-hmm. So, I think it's wonderful. You don't have just lawyers speaking to lawyers. So often you have lawyers speaking directly to artists and companies speaking directly to artists. And so it becomes more important in those settings. Well, it just changes the focus, right? So the strategy is no longer trying to get what you want for your person past the other guy through, you know, a legal triple Lutz, and more about how can I speak as plainly as possible so that my artist understands what I'm saying? How can we memorialize that in a contract that they feel confident in?
Yeah, contract's supposed to be just like a meeting of the mind, right?
Yeah.
It's a meeting of the minds. It's like I've always wondered like how they can enforce some of these contracts or like end user agreements, right? That are like so lengthy and like in such a fine print that you have to magnify it. And it's like,
oh, and unpack every phrase and refer to terms and definitions. And it's crazy. It doesn't need to be that complicated anymore.
Hey, I just got a couple more questions if you can entertain them.
Sure.
What is a music library and why would a songwriter be interested in having their music in a library?
So yeah, a music library is an important function or important asset of any, music publisher or licensing company or label, because it gives you something that the artist has already created. They're already happy with it. This is an expression of who they are as a composer, whether that's their own sort of solo project or an assignment that they've given themselves, like a different moniker or whatever. And we can pull easily from that. And so one of the functions of the artist agreement is to say, hey, what do you have laying around that you would like to farm out for licensing opportunities and use that music to open revenue possibilities for yourself? And then we can draw up an agreement that says, okay, so if you submit this stuff to us, we can turn this around pretty quickly. In other words, if a music supervisor requests a list of songs that meet certain criteria, like we want it to be engaging and uplifting and lots of guitars and yada, yada, that may spark our memory and, okay, we'll hunt for stuff like that in our library. It's already created. We don't have to go back to the artist and ask them to compose something fresh. They already have something that we think will work. Here it is. They love it. We go back to the artist and, talk to them about it. And then that's it. So that becomes the mailbox money that people talk about, that sort of passive revenue stream. And, in many cases, it's, let's say the term is a year. Okay, well, next year that company says, rather than make a whole new campaign, we want to keep this thing going. And rather than having to search for new music, this one worked really well. Let's just license it again. And so, then it just sort of keeps that thing going, And it's a real, it can be a real boon for artists.
So a songwriter that's got a bunch of songs, that's like a good thing that they should probably look for is like a music library that would be interested in, promoting.
Yeah. Yeah. And you might fill a niche that, that no one else is filling, especially if you're not doing anything else with the music that you have laying around, or maybe it doesn't sound really the way that you want your voice to sound for your solo project, but it's still,
right,
you still think it's got a cool thing going, then you just submit it under a moniker and something might happen there rather than let that expression of your creativity just kind of hang out on your hard drive, which there's nothing wrong with that either. But rather than doing that, you could actually put that feeling that you expressed out into the world and affect people in a similar way as your super authentic artistic material would do. It's just a different use of your creativity.
Right.
So I think having a library and perhaps a moniker if you feel like you need to protect that identity is a really good idea for any artist.
I think that's some really good advice. An artist that wants to protect their cool image, or it just has a different vibe, right?
Yeah, like, so instead of putting it out as, yeah, it's like your artist name, you could put it out as something else, you know, like make up a different name or something.
But by your nickname.
Yeah, and it's, and okay. it's a neat thing to do. It's like, well, okay, so you've got your voice and you know what you want to sound like and your solo stuff, but, you know, maybe you'd be really good at writing a Michelob ad, you know, like just like getting down with like a big chunky guitar riff, or like,
yeah,
throw down, your hip hop artist. Well, you know, maybe you want to try something more, you know, rock and roll or jazz influenced, or see what comes out. I mean, your artistry is not going to like die because you tried something different. You might actually learn something about yourself.
Sure. Sure. I noticed that like a lot of companies out there, like they don't want to accept unsolicited work. Is that something that you guys have to deal with? Like,
sure.
Like if somebody has a demo, or not maybe a demo, but just has some tracks that they'd like to have, you know, as consideration.
Absolutely.
Is that something that you guys do?
Yeah, definitely. And when I was at HBO, I listened to just about everything that came to my desk, just because I, you know, I like music, and someone was brave enough to pluck up the courage and submit something to me. And so I feel like it was part of my, frankly, my job description, but also like my own personal value to listen to that and respect that courageous gesture, you know? And so I do that, and we all do that here at Color Wheel as well. It's just that we may not, it can be frustrating because I've been on the other side. It can be frustrating when you don't hear back from a company right away and you think, oh, I'm just screaming into the void. I can tell you, I would say the majority of the time you are being listened to and there's no value placed on it if you don't hear back. It's just that we don't have anything right now that would work. And so I'm not going to waste your time by, you know, starting this whole conversation about, you know, signing a deal or something when I don't think I would be able to give you an opportunity at the moment.
Sure. Well, not everything's a fit. I mean,
yeah.
if you have a catalog of music that's in a certain space and people know you for that, you know, maybe if somebody sends you something that's outside of that, it's a real risk, or maybe not risk, but I suppose it's the potential for something just to sit unnoticed, and that doesn't benefit anyone. I would imagine.
Perfect. Perfectly said. I'd say that's true. It's just sort of, I, you know, and then it's like, well, Color Wheel's not doing anything for us, you know, like this is stupid, you know, and I don't want to have that. I don't want to have that association with anyone.
Yeah, but you know, people just want to. They try to protect themselves, and so it's like they deflect. And if you don't have all the facts, it's really hard to, you know, make a reasoned decision.
Right.
But I can appreciate not wanting to feel that kind of heat, or even if it's just you never hear it, but maybe you can feel it, you know?
Yeah, and it's and again, this is not about me or really even just Color Wheel. It's about the artist who took the step to submit. And I always want to encourage that, whether Color Wheel is the right fit or not, there will be opportunities out there for the artist. And I would like to be a resource, even if Color Wheel isn't the right fit.
Yeah. Does Color Wheel have like a submission page or anything like that?
Yeah. I mean, it's not, because we're not trying to be APM or Music Bed or any of these other, you know, sort of giant licensing houses, we don't have a fully digital submission schedule. What we do is, you know, people reach out to us via email, and we're fine being under the size of those giant companies. And so we have a little more control. We have a little more time to devote to new artists. And, you know, that feels good.
And so like somebody could just send you like a,
yeah,
like a disco,
yeah, or Dropbox in their email, like, and a file or two. I mean, we get people submitting just like compressed files via an email attachment. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, just because
you're like the first person I've heard say that. So yeah. You guys are very brave.
It's fine. It's, I mean, you know, it's the same. I admire good packaging. You know, I can see when someone's been willing to go the extra mile and place their thing, you know, get a Dropbox account and do all the links. And I think that's very healthy. It's good skill for any composer to have and develop. But I don't think it's a prerequisite, you know. Sure. So that stuff doesn't matter as much to us.
Okay, one last question. One last question. I left it. It's a multi-parter. No, I'm just kidding. It's just, is there one piece of advice that you'd like to give the listeners?
Yeah. I would say from a business perspective, get familiar with the standard boilerplate language of a license. Don't be scared of it. Read it and Google terms and clauses until you're familiar with what they actually mean. Mm-hmm. Once you've identified those basic points of a license, you'll learn how to push back. You'll learn where it's appropriate for you to ask for things, and it'll become less scary and you will be more effective and you'll be more in control of your career as a result. And you'll probably make, you know, a little more money in there and feel better about everything once you sign a contract, you know, because you'll understand what you've just done. And you'll sure. be able to identify things that are outside of those norms.
Yeah, no, that's a terrific parting piece of knowledge there.
It's pretty boring. I know, I'm just on the admin side.
hey, the fact that you can talk contracts at 10:30 in the morning and give people advice on that's impressive.
I love this shit.
That's awesome. Hey, so is there anything that's going on that you'd like to talk about? Anything that you guys are doing or?
Sure. We do a lot of collaboration between our artists, kind of like a publishing company does, you know, sort of the Brill Building kind of vibe. We get artists together and write, co-write, stuff like that. We have a slightly different culture surrounding it, and we call them, you know, collabs. And we get people sometimes fly them in to studios here in Denver. And people get together and they just compose, you know, off the cuff stuff. Sometimes people bring little fragments of ideas. And that's something that I want everyone to know about, because the way that we do them, without giving away too much, is a little more unique. And we've had a lot of success with our artists who've just had so much fun with us in the studio. And that's something that I'm, in addition to the educational component, I'm super proud of, even though I'm not as much involved in that aspect as are, you know, Sean, Ben, and Jeff. And they work out of Denver as well as LA and Nashville, but we've been focusing primarily here in Denver.
Wow, that's really great.
Yeah.
I'd like to know more about that myself.
But sure.
I just really appreciate all the time that you took with us. You were very generous with your time. Ted, it was a real pleasure getting to chat with you today. I wish you continued success, and I look forward to seeing what Color Wheel is up to here in the future.
Thanks so much, Stephen. It's been an absolute pleasure talking with you, and I'm so happy that you're doing this, you know, doing what you're doing here in Denver. I think you are part of, you know, what's elevating the scene. And that is awesome.
Well, thanks, Ted. This is Steve Cleveland, and you've been listening to Sync Club. Hey, check out the show notes for details about Color Wheel Music. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe. Hey, thanks for the hang. We'll see you here next week at the club.